All right. I'm going to stop the music. And you're going to stall. Okay?
Yep. All right. Talk about an abrupt entrance, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Blue Shirt Banter Radio. Me and Jim Schmiedeberg. Jim will be around in just a few moments as he's trying to get our guest for tonight, a fantastic Ranger, a fantastic Calgary Flame, a Stanley Cup winner, who has written an interesting book, to say the least, called Playing with Fire, Theo Fleury. Hopefully will join us shortly. As I said, Jim is working with Theo to make that connection. You know, you read this book, and I got to tell you, fans, you got to go out and get this book if you haven't read it yet. You know, it really takes you on the inside of the Theo's life, Theo's early life, then through juniors and playing, and then the account that he gives. You know, it's a somber and it's a telling tale early on, but it gets kind of fun for if you're a Ranger fan to find out what was going on inside that Ranger locker room in 1999 and what was going on and Theo's opinions of the players and coaches with the Rangers. But of course, the main theme is this journey that Theo has taken. He's come out of it on the good end, and then we're all glad about that. We all love Theo. He gave it all on the ice. He left nothing unturned on that ice. A terrific player, and I think all Ranger fans appreciated that because we saw the effort. And what I've talked about on previous shows. The hate-to-lose mentality, and this is a man who had it. He played with guys who had it, and the guys who didn't have it, he definitely outs them in this book as being, maybe not caring about the game and the team as much as they can, as much as they should have. And he really talks about it, and I'm telling you, it's a fascinating thing, and it's not just the Rangers stuff. Which, of course, I couldn't wait to get to. I mean, the name of the game, the name of the show is Blue Shirt Banner Radio. I mean, so, of course, I was interested in the Rangers stuff, but just the stuff that went on with him and Graham James early on, it's very dark. But I think if you have, people who have dealt with abuse and stuff of this nature, this needed to come to light because, you know, the story needs to be told to help others because that's really the main crux of the whole thing. I don't know exactly. We'll find out from Theo himself what his, what he thought would come out of all this. But hopefully we'll talk to Theo in a second. I hear some scrambling in the background.
Don't make promises we can't keep yet. I'm still getting voicemail. I just wanted to interject here for a second, but I'm still trying. We had this all set up at 8 o'clock, but what are you going to do? This is what live radio is all about, so I'm going to mute myself again and keep trying. So,
all right,
keep
Jim.
You entertained.
I will if I got to break out the old juggling won't work on radio. We could talk a little bit about what went on in the Atlanta Thrashers game last night.
Here, wait.
Holy. What? Yeah. Welcome to the Paulie D Show. This is our version of the Paulie D Show. Well, this actually sums up the way the Rangers defense was played last night, but hopefully we'll have Theo in a few minutes.
All right, I'm going to mute out and try him again.
Okay. And hopefully, right. Theo, I can't believe the hoopla that surrounds getting Theo Fleury, it's a big thing for us, and we're really excited, and hopefully we can succeed where others have failed, but I don't want to harp on it too much, because it just sounds like whining. It sounds like an Islander broadcast. So I wanted to talk a little about the Atlanta game. You know, the spin doctoring that goes on during these Ranger broadcasts is just, like, unbelievable. They wanted us to believe that that game was an up-and-down game both ways, especially in the first period. Rosen and Micheletti going absolutely, oh, this is exciting. But they didn't realize that the majority of the chances were Atlanta on our goal. Dominating play. Lundqvist left out on his own. I mean, completely naked out there. Defensive breakdowns after defensive breakdowns. And, of course, the spin doctors, Rosen and Micheletti saw it a whole different way. And, you know, of course, it's always the other team has elevated their play. It's never the Rangers sticking a joint up. And that's what it was in the first period. And, of course, the Rangers get their act in the third period together, which is a trend we've been seeing. What happened is they outplay the team, but if they run into any bad luck and a goaltender that, you know, knows what he's doing out there, it just doesn't get done. You can't play one period of hockey in this NHL and think you're going to win a game. And I don't know what John Tortorella was thinking about with that fourth line of Rovers or whatever they were. But you cannot have just throw guys out there and say you're a center because you played center in juniors. Aaron Voros continues to be a horror show. Actually got quoted on one of the blogs on one of my tweets last night that he may be. I think it was in the battleofnewyork.com that they quoted me, yours truly, the mouth is saying Aaron Voros is the worst player ever in the NHL. So, listen, the guy is a horror show, and then you throw a mishmash out of him there, him with Brashear, and the guy who got sent down today, his name escapes me at this point. What's his name? Somebody put in that chat room. That guy just got sent down today. Man, I'm telling you,
Dane
when
Byers.
I got to add with. Dane Byers, the voice has emerged. Any
yes,
luck
well,
on
well,
the answering machine with
Mr. Fleury? As I just posted in the chat room, I tried to call him again, got his voicemail again, and then called his personal publicist phone number, who I was given in case of emergency. I sounded the general alarm and made an executive decision and declared it an emergency. Well, his publicist sounds like she's out at a bar because I just heard all kinds of noise in the background and laughter, and she was having a good old time. And she said, well, let me try and reach him, and then she hung up. So I don't know what that means.
Once again, this is a fine mess you've got me into, Jim Schmiedeberg. Jim, you know, you put my credibility on the line with this interview. I have a reputation, credibility in this
Billions
internet
of
radio.
People listening around the world, and look at it. I mean, here we go. This is becoming the opening of Al Capone's vault.
Do you want to give Don Murdoch a try? I mean, let's come down to getting Donnie Murdoch on here. Somebody get Donnie Murdoch from his Don Murdoch school. We'll call him up.
We're going to try this again. I'll be back.
All right.
Keep them entertained like only you can, my friend.
I'm doing it. I'm talking puck. I'm talking Ranger puck. I'm trying to hold things together. I'm like the captain of the Titanic here, folks. I mean, we're sick and fast. I mean, it's been so far, getting off to a little bit of a sluggish start, but listen, it's for free. So I don't want, I'm not getting paid for this, although I should be because I do extensive research into everything that we do here. As a matter of fact, I got the outline of what we were going to talk about 2 hours ago from Jim, who did all of it, and I'm just sitting here riding his coattails, so to speak. So the Rangers look horrible. I don't know what John Tortorella thinks with his team. Like, he refuses to bring people up. We're still going with six defensemen. Would you stop? And, you know, we know two of them stink. I don't care how much you tell me how much Redden's and Blazin proof. I haven't really seen him, you know, heading this torpedo offense that, you know, we're, you know, sort of supposedly have here when the Tortorella safe is death. It's turning into, I feel like I'm watching Tom Rennie games now. It's not that they're boring, but who the heck scores on this team? Other than it's like when we used to have Yager. It's Gaborik. You know, you get a defenseman in there, and who else? No. I know the injuries now plays a part, but really no contributions from anybody. I mean, and then I don't know if you guys caught this on Hockey's Future, but Leslie Treff came out with her under 26-year-old Ranger evaluations, and I think all of them were pretty dead on, except the Brian Boyle. She gave a C-, and I got to say, I give Boyle a little bit higher marks than that. I mean, you know, the guy has been playing in situations, being a penalty killer. We know he's been horrible on faceoffs, and that has to improve for Shipshore. They need to have that improvement. He's guys blocking shots, and I think, you know, if you're looking for scoring from him, you're not going to get it while he's on the fourth line and playing with the likes of Aaron Voros and the P.A. Parentos and the Don Henleys or whatever that guy's name was. How come his name is escaping me today? I don't know why. I guess he just made no – Dane Byers. The Dane Byers of the world. So anyway, yeah, so they called up P.A. Parenteau, and hopefully, you know, he can add some scoring punch. Right now, the Rangers have a patchwork team. You know, it's funny. I was thinking today about this, and this is it seems like Tortorella did a lot better. Now, correct me if this is wrong. Let's take the playoffs out of the equation. And didn't Tortorella have this team playing a lot better when he had Rennie's guys than with his own guys lately? I mean, we get up to that good start. The Rangers really look good. And under Rennie's guys, Avery was allowed to run rampant. And under Tortorella, you know, I mean, you know, under Tortorella, you know, he's the guy and it's his team. And he's, you know, it seems like they've completely taken Avery out of the game. And you can blame it on the NHL. You can blame it about somebody is into his head. As a matter of fact, Theo in this book has some interesting takes on Sean Avery as well as a lot of other players. I mean,
speaking of the book, if I don't get Theo Fleury on the phone soon, I think we're going to start reading from it because I now know his voicemail by heart, that's for sure. I am still trying to get him on the phone. I apologize. You know, this was, like I said, this was all set up and scheduled for 8 o'clock, and, well, what can I tell you? I'm still working on it, so, you know, bear with me, guys. I apologize.
Stop apologizing. What else are these guys doing anyway on a Friday night, these internet geeks? I mean, let's face it. I'm only kidding. Hey, I'm one of the guys here doing a show. And Jim is doing a show, and sometimes this happens. You know, this is how it goes in live radio. Maybe tonight we should get together and maybe hit a well, I can't say that, but maybe hit a bar together or something after this show because I may need a couple of drinks after this. But in the book, Theo talks about a lot of things relating to the Rangers. He talks about Mike Richter. He talks about Alexander Daig. You know, Alexander Daig, I love the comments about him. I want to ask about him about that. Richie Pilon's list, which I found hysterical. I actually laughed out loud when I read that. So he's got a lot to say, and hopefully we get him on the line. Again, you know, you're flying by the seat of your pants here, ladies and gentlemen. And, you know, when you do live radio and, you know, your young upstart crew like me and Jim are, you know, it's funny. I got a lot of advice for this broadcast, what to do and what not to do. And one of the things was, somebody wrote, don't do your normal shtick, Mouse. Let him talk. And I'm saying I've done a lot of interviews here. You guys think I dominate the interview? I feel like I'm a good listener. At least my wife thinks so. And it's just, you know, it would be really interesting to see, you know. I mean, we'd like to talk. We'd like to get down dirty, so to speak, here on this show and get down and talk about things. And, well, I hope it works out because I got to tell you, folks, Jim has been freaking out all week about this. He's been a complete mess, a nervous wreck. Just he's been calling me every 20 minutes. It's mouth. What am I going to do here? What questions am I going to ask? And I'm like, you know, it's Theo Fleury. You probably get his answering machine. And guess what? I was right. I mean, it's, you know, but hey, listen, we'll have Theo on. Everything works out in the end. Don't sweat the little things. Like the guest
coming
not
in with
showing.
I'm breaking in with an update.
Okay, update.
I just spoke to his publicist again, and she has not been able to find Theo as of yet, but she did find Mrs. Fleury, and Mrs. Fleury has now joined the search for Theo. So she is trying to get a hold of Theo, and someone will call me back as soon as possible. His wife's name is Jen, and she's a beautiful, beautiful girl, proving once again that hockey players get the best women.
Yeah. And apparently,
so, now I guess I'm just gonna stay on with you until hopefully my phone rings here and what do you? Yeah,
Jim, I've just done a 15-minute soliloquy here about absolutely nothing. Well, I've talked a little about the Atlanta game, and why don't you tell me some of the things that piqued your interest in this book?
Well, I mean, there were obviously quite a few things. I mean, like you said, you know, the book is compelling. It's not a feel good type of story. You know, this is not you know, like some of the Mitch Albom stories or, you know, things like that. It's, you know, it's very dark. It's depressing at times, but it's very compelling. It has a good ending. Theo has been, you know, clean and sober for 5 years, so, you know, that's good. But, you know, it's a very – you pick it up and you really can't put it down. I read this book in 2 nights, and then I reread it over the last couple of days because, you know, just getting ready to have him on, hopefully. And, you know, there were a lot of different things. I don't want to spoil too much because hopefully when we get him on here we can talk to him about it. Just – you know, some of the things that went on when he was with the Rangers and some of the things that went on when he was on other teams and you know, his addictions and what went on before that. It's, like I said, you know, compelling is the only word that I can think of to best describe this book. So,
I mean, it's definitely a book where you, as a hockey fan, it's just right in your wheelhouse, so to speak, because you know all about what these guys got to go through as far as the practice and the growing up with the hockey and then and making it to juniors and you see the whole thing through till the end, till Theo, you know, to Theo's end, and then what we know recently what happens afterwards in his comeback that Theo made in the preseason with the Calgary Flames. He wanted to retire a Flame. And it really is. I mean, I'm not just saying this because he might be our guest. I'm saying this because really, I mean, it's a great book. I mean, it's a fantastic book. I mean, it's got its somber and dark moments, but, you know, it's also a great insight on Theo the person on and off the ice. So I really want to talk more about the book because if we get to go on, we're going to be all talked out.
Right.
I want to address this. Well, since we don't have Theo right now, I'm going to talk about something. I don't know if any of you guys watched NHL Live today, but they had Stan Fishface on.
Hold on a second.
Okay.
I'm going to mute out. Hold on.
All right. Okay, so hopefully Jim will have the great Theo Fleury for us to talk to, and the Blue Shirt Banter audience is waiting with bated breath The guests have filled the chat room. Hundreds and hundreds of Ranger fans listening tonight. And this is just a very interesting subject. And, you know, it's a book. I'd say it again, you know, it's a book you got to go out and get. It's a tale. I know some of the guys already have the book and have read it. And it's, you know, you very rarely get to hear a person talk so candidly and so frankly about other players' play on the ice as well as what they're like in the dressing room. And that's another added feature to this book, especially in the second half of the book, that I think everybody is going to love. And then you've got the Rangers, you know, the inside on the Rangers scoop, which is all of us, we find totally entertaining. And we really haven't seen that much. I mean, since Ratso Sloman did his book, what was it, On Thin Ice, whatever it was. Yeah, I think that was the name of it. Back in the early 80s, late 70s. Sorry. What's
okay.
going on?
I had to answer my cell phone because it was ringing. Theo Fleury just called me on my cell phone, and he has asked me to give him 10 minutes and call him back, and I explained to him that I'll be calling on Skype, so we should have him in just about 10 minutes, and he seems open to staying with us right up until the end tonight, so we should have him for about an hour by the time we get him on the phone. So that's good. So we'll get all the all the stuff we were going to talk about at the end, because I kind of figured, you know, after about an hour, he'd probably be sick of us, kind of like our wives. And I figured that, you know, we'd talk about the game and everything last night and rant about that at the end. So instead, we've done that kind of in the beginning. We just do it backwards. No big deal.
Well, you haven't given me your take on that Atlanta game. I really haven't talked to you too much about it.
My biggest problem was I don't know. I assume it was Tortorella's decision, although I did hear Glenn Sather say a couple of days ago that the Rangers were just going to go with what they had on the roster last night. And I guess, you know, whether that was Tortorella's decision or whether it was Sather's decision, I don't know. But I think I don't understand why. Vinny Prospel played almost half the game last night. And they looked, aside from Vinny Prospel and Marian Gaborik, nobody had any chemistry last night. And when you're throwing out a fourth line of Dane Byers, Donald Brashear, and Aaron Voros, I mean, I just think you're asking for trouble. And the thing that stood out was Vinny Prospel putting in almost half the game last night. Him and Gaborik can't do it all. Somebody's got to step up. Ryan, I said this today on the site, Ryan Callahan, you got to start earning that A, buddy. I mean, now is the time that you earn that A. I mean, you know, it's all hands on deck. You've got to stay. He's got to step up. He's got to start putting the puck in the net.
Well, we're starting to see that perhaps Ryan Callahan is not a guy who's going to be able to put the puck in the net. Perhaps he's only going to be a 15 to 20 goal scorer that's going to give you his all every night, leading the team in hits. He's up there in the NHL in total hits. You know, he gives you 100%, which you love to see. But you know what it is? It feels like it's almost like Robert De Niro's character in, Meet the Fockers, where you have the circle, you know, the circle of trust. Is that what they call it? And it seems like Tortorella only trusts like 20 guys in the whole Ranger organization to deal with him. He won't go outside the circle of trust. You got to go out of the circle of trust. You got to bring up, why don't you have a seventh defenseman? Oh, I mean, it's ridiculous. Why don't you have a seventh defenseman? I just don't get it. And they're playing with a mishmash line. Oh, we could win. We could win with that fourth line. It's atrocious. So, it just shows to me that there's a lack of taking this game serious enough. You've got to make call-ups. You know, one thing I did note, I learned that Dane Byers is not really fitting in with the Rangers at this point in his career. And P.A. Parenteau is not going to be the answer. You're pretty much stuck with what you have. But you know what? I'm going to tell you right now. You're not going to get the job with Aaron Voss in the freaking lineup. The guy is a horror show. He's a nightmare. He doesn't belong in the league. He can't skate. He can't hit. He can't fight. There's nothing redeemable about him as a hockey player.
Yeah,
and
I'm sorry, I need to interrupt. Other than the fact that he can't skate, can't score, can't fight, and can't hit, he's a terrific hockey player.
Oh, I mean, lordy, lordy. I mean, it's ridiculous. I didn't say lordy. I had a Purple Rain moment. But, you know, it's just like, not Purple Rain. What am I thinking of? I don't know what's going on. But, you know, it just, again, it shows a lack of taking the game serious. I know you're playing the Atlanta Thrashers, and despite what Sam Rosen and Joe Micheletti will throw out at you, the listener, they are not the 77 Montreal Canadiens. You can't beat them. You've got to come to play, and you've got to learn to hustle. I mean, Hank should have sued the Ranger defense for reckless abandonment out there in the first period. It was horrible. I'd never seen 3-on-0s. And again, you know, I hate to harp on that broadcast, but it may be the world's most famous arena, but they have the world's most ridiculous announcers. I mean, just call it like it is. Every other you watch a Canadian broadcast, I don't care if it's Vancouver or anything on CBC or Rogers Sportsnet. If their team is playing bad, they're on them, and they say, this guy's not playing well. No, not on that broadcast. It's all sunshine and lollipops, the happy, shiny people broadcast. And let me go off on a rant while we're waiting for Theo.
Yeah, let's just let everybody know who may have just been tuning in and wondering why we're riffing here. Theo Fleury, we're expecting him in just about 5 minutes. We had a little miscommunication on time. I have spoken to him personally. He will be here in about 5 minutes. In the meantime,
all right,
and go.
All right. In the last 7 minutes of a hockey game, and I don't care if the Rangers are up 4-2, if they're down 4-2, I want you to call the play on the ice. If you're an announcer, I want to know who's got the puck, what's happening. I need to know everything. I'm on the edge of my seat, and all I hear, and you know it, folks, is stay tuned for the post-game show. Stay tuned for the post-game show, where so-and-so and 400 other clowns in the car are going to be there in the desk, and they're going to come out and entertain us. And when we're losing, we don't care. I'm watching the game. Call the game. They mentioned it like 8 times last year, last night, with the last 4 minutes of the game. It's just, you know, it really is.
Tune in to the post-game show tonight.
Tonight, the post-game show is going to have Wally D, Bill Pito, Ken Danico, Ron Duguay, Dan Fischler, Al Chocolate, the corpse of Dan Kelly. You know, I mean, really, seriously, I don't care how many guys.
Butch Goring.
Butch Goring. Every other guy we don't want to hear about. I mean, Dave Maloney. I got his name right. Dave Maloney. I mean, they dread these dinosaurs out after a loss. Nobody wants to watch that. Who wants to watch that? Nobody. I want to watch the game. I want to care about the game. There's no buildup. And I guarantee Sam Rosen will never win the Foster Hewitt Award. He won't even win the Foster Brooks Award. I mean, you know, I'm dating two people with that joke, but still.
It's a good one, though.
They got to get to hockey. I mean, you know, he wouldn't win the Hewitt Packard Award. All right, that's a little bit of a stretch, but still, it just drives me crazy. Focus on the hockey and talk frankly. All right. Now, Can I think of anybody that played good in that game last night? I think Artie Anisimov played very well. You know, he got the goal, and I'm looking, you know, we're curious to see what he's going to do. We posed the question on the last show about will he answer the call, and I think he answered the call.
He was on the second line last. He played very well. And seems like whenever he scores, it's always kind of a pretty goal, or, you know, a real heads up type of, you know, he just had his stick in the right place last night, was able to find that rebound and get it past Hedberg. I see said Sam Rosen won't win the Jennifer Love Hewitt Award. I like that.
Sam,
steal that.
1776 called. They want your hairpiece back. I mean, serious. I'm not serious. That's a joke. But, you know, it's just amazing, you know. And, again, I get on the broadcast, and it's always like, oh, mouthful, you could do it better. No, but I can think of people who could do it better. Like every announcer I see on the Center Ice package. It's ridiculous, as the kids say today. We saw Donald Brashear had a fight. He finally tuned up Eric Bolton. He took a month off from his last fight, which was against Orr. We kind of had reports and suspected them. He may have had some kind of migraine problems after that, but that was never confirmed or denied. You know, getting any information from the New York Rangers organization is like, you know, it's trying to squeeze Dick Cheney out of you know, secrets. And a lot of secrecy over there. For a losing team,
A migraine would be considered an upper body injury.
That's right, body injury. Yeah. I mean, you would think, Jim, that with all this secrecy that we work under, that we'd actually be a winning team. You know, I see, you know, Bill Belichick does it over in the Patriots and everything. But, right, we never win anything. Why are we so secret? Like, people are, how do we prepare against the Rangers? Show up. I mean, lately that's been the way it is. And I hate to be so down on a team, and I'm not really. I'm still drinking the Kool-Aid, folks. I'm still drinking it for the future. But they got some dead weight on this team that needs to be, I can't even say shoveled out of here. It needs to be lifted with a crane and needs to be pushed with a bulldozer at full speed. Get these guys out of here. But unless they buy these guys out, we're stuck with them. They're in the way of progress. And that call on Michael Delzato, this is another thing that cheeses me off. Is how can it be a penalty and a diving? It's either one or the other. You either have dove or it's a penalty. It's a stupid penalty. It's a ridiculous rule. And of course, Kerry Frazier was in the building, so, you know, we're minus one right there as far as the calls go. You know, it's just that really was a could have been a key component in a Ranger comeback there was that penalty that coincidental minors that was called on that Delzato tripping penalty. And you could see Delzato turn to the ref and say, that was horse dookie. And you know, I'm paraphrasing, of course, but that's what he said. And it was. It was ridiculous. I mean, how can you – it's – in high C, me and my friend high C, he called me up. Can you believe this? It's either or. This is the stupidest rule in hockey. What, you want to show up the refs? Come on, give me a break. Is that why they put this diving? Don't show us up. Guess what? The spotlight is put on the referee from the horrible officiating every night. They think that's going to take the spotlight away from them? I tell you, and you want, you know, again, you start the music again, you know, really? I mean,
actually, I'm going to mute out and get Theo on the phone, so I'll be right back, okay?
Well, right. Hopefully, ladies and gentlemen, the great Theo Fleury will be joining us. And I got to tell you, this has been quite the – this is almost like a filibuster I have done for 30 minutes, ranting and raving about all the things that presently I find wrong about the New York Rangers. But listen, you know, the season is full of ups and downs, and hopefully we can right this ship. and get it together. The injuries right now are putting a severe roadblock in that achieving that, and it's just it's got to get better. I mean, they got a game against Ottawa, or as they say up on the CBC broadcast, Ottawa. The Rangers are going to be playing Ottawa Saturday, and you know, they're going to be facing Ottawa's. It's been up and down. I think they can win that game. You know, these games
are
winnable.
I'm gonna break in here. Joining us tonight is a man who played 16 seasons in the NHL with the Flames, the Avalanche, the Blackhawks, and, of course, your New York Rangers. He scored 455 goals and 633 assists and has written his autobiography titled Playing with Fire. Please join me in welcoming to the program Theo Fleury. Theo, Jim, and Eddie, good evening and welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. How are you doing tonight?
We're doing good. Glad
to
have you.
We're doing pretty good.
Theo,
good.
We appreciate you coming on with us tonight. And we both read the book, and we just want to say that it's an amazing book. It's compelling, and we're glad you're here to talk about it with us tonight.
Yeah, me too.
Go ahead. Go ahead, buddy.
It seems like it's going to be a fun interview, and I like it already because I like getting down to brass tacks and finding out everything, and Theo seems like he's in a good mood, and I love it.
Well, good. Theo, we're going to talk a little bit about everything, but we wanted to kind of start a little bit on your early years, and we want to touch on a little bit what went on with Graham James. And James, he was sent to prison in 1997 for 3 years. Indicted on the 350 counts of sexual abuse stemming from the Sheldon Kennedy accusations. Did that sentence bother you when you heard it was only 3 years? Because it bothered me, and I wasn't even involved. As being someone who was a part of that, did that bother you at the time?
Obviously I think that, you know, there's changes that need to be made because, you know, something like that really doesn't deter guys from stopping the behavior, I guess. And I guess I was a little bit shocked at the leniency with what was given, but that's the nature of this whole beast here is that, changes need to be made, to deter these guys from doing what they're doing, but obviously, from what I hear through the grapevine, these guys aren't treated very well when they're in prison. So that's not really up to me. It's the court system. It's the law, and if you have a good lawyer, I guess you can get away with stuff.
Now, let me ask you: Have you decided? Are you going to press charges against him? Can you still press charges against him if you want to?
Yeah, there's no statute of limitation in Canada, so we are pursuing that option right now. I have a lawyer, and we're getting everything together, and eventually something will happen. So,
good. That's. That's good to hear, and I'm glad there's no limitations on that. Has he tried since the book has come out, and you've done a lot of promotion for the book in Canada, and now I know you're starting to promote it down here in the States. Has he tried to contact you again regarding the book? No.
No.
Okay.
No.
I don't even know
where he is, so you know.
I haven't heard
from him since Sheldon pressed charges. So,
okay, I had read something somewhere that he's over in Europe, still coaching junior hockey, which is just, if that's true, that's just incredible.
Yeah, well, you know, obviously, 3.5 years in prison wasn't enough. So,
yeah, you know, this is Eddie here, and I, Theo, when I read this book, and I'm going to tell you, you know, straight up, it really makes you angry. Like I know it doesn't compare the anger that you went through, but just reading it as an outside observer, not just what went on between you and this subhuman, and that's what I'm going to call him, ladies and gentlemen, because to me, somebody who does that is a perpetrator of this kind of nonsense, is a subhuman. It made me angry, and it also, your childhood, it just with your mom being, basically out of it, and your, you know, I don't want to give too much away, and your dad not being around, and basically one of the things that made me very angry was that they were kind of out of your life and kind of ignored you, but then when you became, famous for your hockey skills as a teenager, suddenly they wanted back in your life and wanted to be a part of your life. How do you feel about that?
Well, I'm very proud of my parents and where they are, and, it's a difficult disease, and I feel very fortunate that my parents are alive and sober, and they've been married for 42 years, which I think is an incredible feat, which tells me they took their vows seriously and through thick and thin, and we have a great relationship now. They both apologized to me a while ago, but I think that, I've come to a point in my life where, I'm okay with everything. Obviously, the good Lord put me through everything that I went through for a reason. And today I'm in a position to help, a whole bunch of people. We've already helped some people, since my website went live about a month and a half ago, we've been able to put 8 guys in treatment who have reached out through the website. So, just goes to show me that I'm doing the right thing and doing exactly what I'm supposed to do.
No doubt that's a fantastic news. And I guess, it turns out maybe that was perhaps your calling, is to help other people. I mean, from your experiences and the hardship that you endured, and it's so good to hear that you have a website. And what's the website address and so we can let the folks out there know?
Absolutely. It's www.theoflurry14.com.
Okay,
great. Right. We'll also put that up on our
website. If they're looking for help, send us an email. We'll try and do our best to direct them in the right direction. And another great website too is 1in6.org, who I've recently become a board member with 1in6.org. This stat is going to blow you guys away. 1 in 3 girls, 1 in 6 boys, by the time they're 16 years old, have been sexually molested.
Wow. I mean, that really is. That is staggering. I mean, it is staggering,
Yeah. And 80% of those kids that have been molested by a family member.
Unbelievable. I just don't, it's so hard. You know, I was fortunate to grow in a semi-normal family, and it just, you really don't know. I guess everybody kind of turns a blind eye. It just really doesn't know what goes on in other people's households, and it is just a staggering statistic.
Yeah, and that's the power of abuse, right? Is everybody
right?
Unfortunately, it's a difficult topic to talk about. I've heard of, psychologists who have dealt with people who have been abused after hearing their story. They need counseling. So, it's a subject that needs to be talked about more, because it happens every minute, every hour of every day to some poor, innocent kid that, it's not their fault, thank God, that my family has been able to break the cycle of abuse, alcohol addiction, drug addiction, you know, and it's scary what's going on out there. And you know, the prisons are full of guys who've been abused. The court systems are full of people who've been abused. And you know, it weighs heavy on the taxpayers' dollars. So, you know, I think it's important that, you know, that I've been able to kind of stand out in the front here, in the front lines, and you know, try to, you know, do as many interviews and answer as many questions as I can, because I really believe that, you know, when you throw that stat out there, you know, that puts us in the same category as HIV and cancer and diabetes and all these other major diseases. You know, I've been right across the country, all across Canada, and you know, there's small little groups that, you know, are trying their best to reach out and help these people who've been abused. But, you know, it seems that the general public just doesn't want to fund these type of groups. So we've created the Theo Fleury Foundation that will start, you know, raising money and start stroking checks to these groups all across the country that need our help.
Now, Theo, you were talking about the and how it went with the abuse and the situation, and you say in the book how, you know, this was going on and you couldn't tell anybody because this guy had spun such a web that everybody just loved him, and you felt like that even if you stood up, nobody would believe you, because even at the very end, you were talking about how there were, when he was fired from, I believe it was the Calgary Hitman, but I don't remember if that was the exact part of the story, but you said that there was outrage from the parents when, you know, how could they do this? And so I understand how you must have felt, you could have felt like you had no one to turn to at that point.
Yeah, it was, you know, you got to remember this is 27 years ago, you know, sexuality at that point was, you know, was even, you know, nobody talked about sex, you know, I never got the birds and the bees talk from my parents, you know, but I think we've come a long ways with sexuality and you know, we are a lot more open with our kids, about that kind of stuff. You know, so, and I think there's a lot more awareness out there, you know, obviously in the U.S., you know, when a sexual predator is convicted and he comes out, that, you know, if he moves into your neighborhood, you know that he's there. So, you know, the law is a little bit different in Canada, but, you know, hopefully, you know, in the near future, we can get that law changed as well.
And the other thing that amazes me just in reading the book and now in talking to you and hear you talk about it is that, you know, for someone who, when you talk about all these things in the book and you sound how out of control you felt and your life felt, and now you just seem so at peace. I mean, really, when you read the book and now just talking to you, you just seem so at peace at everything. And I can't imagine what that must feel like for you.
Well, you know, it's very powerful stuff. You know, to be at a point in my life where I had a gun in my mouth and I was going to pull the trigger, to, you know, about, I guess, 6 years later, to be in a position where I can help a whole bunch of people is, you know, is nothing short of a miracle, you know. But, you know, I did the work, you know. I reached out and asked for help slowly but surely, you know, I went to 4 treatment centers and, you know, probably done 2,000 hours of therapy you know, it allowed me to pick up the tools, to be able to make a decision on September 18th of 2005 that I wasn't going to drink and drug anymore. And then with the help of my wife, we started picking up the pieces and getting our lives back together to a point where, where we do have some peace in our life and we do have, a phenomenal relationship. And, I have a healthy, monogamous, intimate relationship with a woman that I love. And I think, like I said, that's a miracle.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, you reconnected ties. Everything's good with your family, with your mom and dad. You have a great support system now. And when you look back at it, and you look back from that point where you said that you had the gun in your mouth, could you ever imagine that you would have come this far? And does it still seem like way back, or does it still seem like yesterday to you?
Well, I think that part is a long ways away. Obviously I was in a place where, I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy to be in that type of place where, you've lost all hope. You have no idea what the rest of your life looks like. And you basically have secluded yourself, away from your family, away from your friends, away from your kids. I think the biggest thing is that, if you look at my hockey career and the way that I play, challenge I think I reverted back to how I played the game and was able to kind of reach down and take my recovery very, very seriously and worked hard at it. And in the end, I have a tremendous amount of peace in my life. And, every day I get up every morning, I look forward to helping somebody who's, maybe down in the dumps and doesn't have any hope. And, they can look at my story or read my book and know that, no matter how far down the ladder you've gone, that you can make it back and not only make it back, but get to a point in your life where, you can help, a whole bunch of people.
That's really quite the achievement. And, I know what, speaking for all us Ranger fans, all us hockey fans, it's so glad that you've reached that peace and was so ecstatic about it. And it's just it was just such a horror, and it's turned out to be good. And I'll tell you, I wouldn't say I've had similar experiences, but I'll tell you, when you finally meet that woman, and let's face it, sometimes we shoot ourselves in the foot with the women when we met. When we finally meet that woman that really understands you and you can be open with, about everything. And it was funny because, not funny, but it was ironic that in the book you talk about the troubles with your ex-wife, Shannon. And it turns out that this James character was kind of her best friend through your breakups. I mean, how did you feel about that?
It's one of those things that's really hard to explain if you haven't really gone through it. But the guy was very good at what he did.
He bamboozled everything.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's who these guys are. They're chameleons, and they can adjust to whatever situation is needed. I'm just happy that I'm alive. I'm just happy that I'm in a position now where we can get some people some help. I want to create a big organization that takes this thing head on, and I'm excited about the future. There's so many people. There's been a lot of successful people who have reached out and said to me, how can I help? How can I get involved? And that's great because the more the more successful people I have behind me, I think the better it's going to be, when we're raising money and doing events and whatnot, that, we can support, a lot of people. We're in the process right now of building a 100-bed recovery and treatment center here in Calgary, and looking really forward to working with the 1 in 6 guys and all their initiatives that they have on the table, and I'm excited.
Have any of the ex-players that you played with Calgary or Chicago or the New York Rangers, have they reached out and tried to help you out as far as
obviously, some of the events that we're going to do, I'm going to have to call on my former teammates and my buddies to come out and support what we're doing. But, I've had emails from a lot of my teammates that who are very proud of me and are going to support me here as we move forward. And, like I said, there's lots of good things happening in my life, and it all has to do with being of service to another human being, and I think we need more of that in this world.
That's for sure.
Yeah, and you talked about your ex-teammates and how they're helping you, and one of the parts of this book that I find so intriguing is just the inside stories that you get, that you deliver, and you deliver them with such frankness and such candor that I absolutely totally love that part of the book, from your Calgary days, to your Ranger days. I mean, the cast of characters and your evaluations and assessments of these guys, both on and off the ice. I got to tell you, Theo, when I read that Richard Pilon had a lisp, I chuckled at the Starbucks. Everybody was looking at me like I was a nut job. I was like, but that's just me, But I really like it. I know the Ranger fans are out there, and I they want to hear the stories. I don't want to give them all away because the book is chock full of them, from Calgary, to the Rangers and the whole bit. But let's talk about some of the more controversial things as far as I think Ranger fans would go, some of your opinions. And on that Rangers squad, especially in 1999, when they just basically threw money all over the place, including yourself, why don't you tell them about the Rangers offer that they made you, the initial offer?
Yeah, well, they made one offer, and I took it. It was for 4 years at $28 million, but you got to understand, I played all 11 years in the league to get that to that point in my life where I became a completely unrestricted free agent, and I wanted to test the market. And I think Dave Checkitz and the GM at the time, Neil Smith, flew directly to Winnipeg and were at my agent's office the day the clock struck midnight, and put in the offer, and they made sure that nobody was going to get to me first.
Wow. And then they gave you 3 hours to answer?
Yeah.
3 hours. I would have been like, where do I sign?
Yeah. Well, yeah, when I saw the figures, I was like, okay, I'm in. No, it's like winning the lottery, right? Obviously I'd worked really hard and been successful for a lot of years, and I think they knew what they were getting, and to be honest with you guys, I feel badly about what happened in New York. I know that I was responsible for a lot of the things that happened, and if there's Ranger fans out there listening, man, I apologize. I wish I could have kept it together, but unfortunately, life throws us some curveballs, and But you know what, man? Like, I love being able to play a match in Square Garden every night. It was just an unbelievable place to play, and so much history and so many great stories happened there. And you know, I loved my time in New York, you know, regardless of everything that was going on. You know, it was great to put on that that blue shirt and represent the city of New York. But like I said, you know, I do feel badly about how things went. You know, if they would accept my apology, that would be great.
Well, you're here with us tonight. That's good enough for us, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the show does actually go out to a lot of Ranger fans. We have a Ranger chat room that goes on, and they're all saying no need to apologize, and that's what they're saying to you. They're saying, Theo, no need to apologize. And I just second that. You know, Theo, that team that was put together, you know, Gordie Howe couldn't have fixed, and we knew you were giving your all every night, and this is what you did throughout all your career. You left no stone unturned out there. You took on guys twice your size. Everybody in New York, we love you. We still love you. Once a Ranger, always a Ranger. We always say here. And the fans, I know, have nothing. And I mean this in all seriousness. I'm not schmoozing you or telling you something or hosing you just because they're a guest. They have fond affections. And I'm talking young and old of Theo Fleury in New York. And we're just so glad that you're back and you found that peaceful place. Jim?
And Theo, the most important thing, your time with the Rangers, it took you all of about 5 minutes as a Ranger to learn that you hated the Islanders and their fans, and that's always good enough for the Rangers, because
we all remember the
battles you had there.
You know what? That was some fun hockey. I always enjoyed playing on Long Island. You know, of all the places that I've played, you know, the Battle of Alberta was pretty intense and pretty crazy and pretty wild, but you know, the atmosphere in that building when you stepped on the ice, even for warm-up, was unbelievable. And you could just feel the hate, you know. And it was you know what? I think most nights I scored a goal in that building. So I love playing there.
Oh, yeah. You shoved it right up their proverbial took it, so to speak. And they hated you even more for that. And I'm going to tell you right now, if you let me just have... There were classless Islander fans, and I remember those signs and those props they had when you played, and it was despicable, and it just shows you why they're on Long Island and why they're going to be moving to Kansas City soon, because their fans are low class.
Apparently everybody on Long Island is all in recovery, and they've never had any problems in their life, so.
Yeah.
They're all Was it at Nassau Coliseum where the woman was sitting next to the penalty box with the whiteboard writing messages to Theo when you were in the penalty box? Was that on Long Island? Yeah.
Yeah, they're having lots of fun. So I remember they had Ranger jerseys with 14, and then the name bar was Crackhead. I thought that was hilarious.
See, that's the difference between Long Island
and
New York.
They had the time to do that.
On Long Island, they bring the whiteboard and they write notes on it to the players, and then New York would just take it with the whiteboard.
that's
right. Well, you guys still yell Podvan sucks there.
Oh,
which
yeah.
Is cool.
Still.
I was going to say, the Islander fan has a lot of time to write on that, you know, come up with these jerseys and stuff in between wins. I mean, it'd be like a week and a half between wins with that team, but. We digress, and, you know, we have no love lost for the New York Islanders, that's for sure. But,
that's right.
You know, some of the things that, you know, some of the players you played with and on the Rangers, and I know the fans and want to just – you kind of talk about this Alexander Daigle. This is another one that just – what was your take on Alexander Daigle?
All the tools and no toolbox.
This is great.
Yeah, he you know, the guy was, he could have been unbelievable. The skill set that he had and how well he skated And but you know, dumb as a post.
Dumb as a bag of hair.
Yeah.
Theo, let me,
well, and, you know, obviously that's, you know, if you look at his career and how it went, you know, it pretty much sums it up right there, you know.
Yeah.
So, and you know what? I tried to be as honest as I could in the book, and you know what? I've always told it like it is my whole life, so, you know, why would I change that now?
Oh, no, oh, it's been, that's what's so great about the book. What did you say, Jim?
We appreciate the candor. We love hearing these stories and things like this. And that's one of the other things we wanted to ask you about is, you know, Ranger fans being the personality that they are, you know, Glenn Sather is a very controversial figure with Ranger fans, but you speak pretty well of him in the book. You seem to have a pretty good relationship with Sather. Would you say that's true?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I respect guys who win, and you know, he was an architect of probably one of the greatest dynasties in the history of hockey, and you know, he was great to me. He was fair with me. He was honest with me, and you know, he reached out on several occasions and asked me if I needed help, and you know, it's tough to help somebody who doesn't want to be helped, and. You know, at that time, I just wasn't ready, you know, to get the help that I needed. And but you know, I call Glenn once a year and ask him how he's doing. And you know, he cared about me a lot. And you know, I respect him for that because you know he cared more about me, the person, than he did me, the hockey player. And when you work for people like that, you know, that's all you can ask for.
Okay, and I want to ask you a little bit about Brian Leetch, and I kind of got the feeling that maybe you had, I don't know if you had issues with some of the Ranger some of these 94 guys that were still with the team when you came in. Brian Leetch, you talk about maybe he didn't rally the team as captain the way he should. Can you kind of give us a little insight on that?
Well, you know, I think it was the wrong group of guys, you know. Obviously, I have a lot of respect for Brian Leetch. You know, he's a Hall of Famer, Conn Smythe winner, and you know, I think he was probably as frustrated as I was. And you know, it was hard getting the guys together. You know, I came from a situation in Calgary where we were together all the time. You know, we lived in a small city. You know, kids hung out together, our wives hung out together. You know, we had a lot of dinners at different guys' houses, and you know, you go to New York and it's completely different. And so it was kind of a, you know, a little bit of a culture shock, and you know, half the guys live in the city, half the guys live out in Rye, and it's hard to get everybody together. And you know, there were some guys on the team I had to introduce myself to them at the year-end party because I didn't know who they were. You know, because we never hung out, you know.
And it's so funny that you say this. I hate to interrupt you, Theo, and you can go ahead if you'd like. But, Go ahead.
Well, I just felt that it was really hard to, you know, to get that chemistry going. You know, as hard as we tried, you know, it was difficult. And, you know. There's a lot of guys making a lot of money, and, you know, maybe they were, I don't know. I don't know what they were doing, but, you know, sometimes, you know, for like 3 years, you know, it was like pulling a fire alarm every time, you know, the opposing team got the puck in our zone. We couldn't keep the puck out of our net. We couldn't play defense. You know, it was like, it was frustrating.
It was like a Chinese fire drill, as they used to say in the old days. But,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
you know, and it's funny because this was actually mentioned. You were actually mentioned on NHL Live today on the NHL Network. And Stan Fischler, one of our favorites here, and I say that with a lot of sarcasm, a caller called in, and it wasn't me. He said, You know, I think the problem with the Rangers is all like what Theo Fleury said in his book, that all the older players are up in Westchester and all the younger players are in the city. And he posed Stan this question. He said, and Stan said, you know what? What Theo Fleury said is applesauce. And I, first of all, I couldn't believe the harsh language that he was using on NHL Network, applesauce. And then he goes on to say that, oh, Brian Leetch wasn't successful in New York. Didn't Marc Messier live in New York City and win a cup? And I felt like reaching through the screen and strangling, well, I'm not there. I'm a peaceful guy. But I felt like saying, Stan, they brought the family in for 94. Where do you think Glenn Anderson came from? Where do you think Marc Messier came from? Where did you think Kevin Lowe in Edmonton, where they were a family? That's what why the Rangers won a cup. They had a lot of veterans that took to the family-type atmosphere, and I believe there was a lot of credence in what you said. What's your response to that?
Yeah. Well, I think Stan thinks that, you know, it's okay for every years for the Rangers to win the cup, you know? You know?
Yeah, exactly. So that was my, get off my soapbox for a second here. Just take over. I got to calm down.
Well, you know, Stan's getting a little bit old, right? So I don't even know if he knew he was on TV or not. So.
Stan got a little bit old. Theo, Stan got a little bit old 25 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. So what is he now?
I think they're holding him up with a pole or a stick in the back there. All right. Anyway, we're having too much fun here.
A coat hanger.
And Theo, so, you played very, very briefly when it was your first season with the Rangers, and they fired John Muckler, and John Tortorella took over as interim coach. And you said that he was kind of hard on you, and at the time you didn't want to hear it from him. Did you want to talk about John Tortorella a little bit and give us your thoughts on him?
Well, I think he's a great coach. It was in such disarray at the end of the season that, I think he was frustrated. I was frustrated with the way things had gone, but the guy won a cup in Tampa Bay. You know, I have to take my hat off to somebody like that. You know, I respect winning, man. I've been a part of a lot of championships in my lifetime, and you know what? That, to me, is the most important thing. That's why we play the game. That's why we get paid the big bucks. And when you don't win, then you have to take responsibility. You should feel crappy at the end of the year if you missed the playoffs. And because you know what? In the end, you didn't do your job, and you didn't get it done. And, you know, that's where your pride, that's where, those kind of things kick in. And John's an intense guy, and I'm happy for him. You know, I think he's done a great job. He's made himself into a great coach, and he doesn't take no BS from nobody. I love watching him and Larry Brooks go at it every time. It's great, great TV. And, you know, it's good.
No doubt about it. I mean, do you think that the hate to lose mentality is gone, or is very rare in today's player compared to back when you played in your prime?
Well, you know, I think, what should happen is they should get rid of the rookie salary cap. You know, I think that is the biggest thing that's ruined the game. You know, these guys come in and they're getting, paid mega bucks right off the bat. So, you know, where's the incentive to get better? You know, I made $90,000 my rookie year in Calgary. I didn't make $1 million till my third contract in the NHL, you know, and it forced me to get better. If I wanted to get paid more money, I needed to improve. I needed to become a complete player. I needed to be a guy that competed every night, you know, and there just isn't that aspect of the game going on, and it's hurt the game. You know, and it's driven salaries up because a 10-year veteran can go to arbitration, compare himself to a rookie who's fallen flat on his face, and, you know, the next thing you know, yeah, what's the arbitrator going to do? A 10-year veteran who's compiled some pretty consistent stats goes into arbitration, compares himself to an Alexander Daigle who's fallen flat on his face, and what's the arbitrator supposed to do? He has to award in favor of the 10-year veteran. And that's why salaries went crazy, and that's why, you know, the salary structure got out of whack, is because those young guys were getting paid big bucks at the beginning of their career, and they didn't earn it, you know?
Right.
And
that's why you got a guy like Wade Redden making $6 million a year.
Well,
yeah.
It's why there's a lot of guys making the money that they shouldn't be making, you know? And there's a lot of guys that deserve to make the money that they make, and there's a lot of guys that don't deserve to make the money that they make. And you know, how do you close that gap? Well, I think you start with the young guys coming in the game and make them earn their first, second, third contract. Because if you make $40 or $50 million during your career, that's plenty of money. You should be able to live the rest of your life very happy and whatnot. But I think at the beginning, you know, you need to earn that money and that's just my opinion. I don't know whether I'm right or wrong, but you know, that's what I.
It's your opinion. You know, it's funny because, you know, at that time you talk about the Daigles, the Pat Falloons, they were making all this crazy money and without actually accomplishing anything. And really, like you said, it's all about winning, and you really should be paid on the basis of your skill and your track record as a winner. I mean, really. I mean, I totally agree with you there. Jim, you got a question?
Well, a perfect example is, you know, if you're on a winning team and you got a whole bunch of points and you're a minus player, that means you're selfish. You know, you don't care about playing defense. Defense wins Stanley Cups. You know, it's simple, you know? But I know if you play in a bad team, you're going to be a minus player no matter what. Because, you know, obviously the other team's scoring more goals than you guys are scoring because you're losing. But, you know, if you're on a winning team and you're a minus player, that means you're a selfish player. And you don't care about playing in your own zone. You don't care about getting your nose dirty, you know, because it's hard work playing defense. And, you know, it hurts playing defense. But, you know, it's rewarding at the end of the year when you look at your stats and you're a plus player. And that's important because that means you can play in every situation. You know, I used to laugh at some guys, they used to whine about, the ice time they were getting. I go, look at your stats. You're a minus player. That means that they can't trust you to put you on the ice. You know what I mean?
Now see, I think it's really interesting, Theo, that you bring up the plus minus stat, because a lot of fans think that's such an overrated stat, and I think it's great that you're putting so much stock into it. A lot of fans, you start bringing up guys plus minus, and they'll jump all over you. Oh, that's such an overrated stat. Look at this, and you got to look at this. But I think it's great that you find it so important as to, you know, a guy's defensive ability.
Yeah, because the game is all about defense now, you know, like I said, defense is not—it's not fun to play, but you know what? It can be very rewarding. You know, when, for example, you know, there's 30 seconds left in the game, and the coach is looking down the bench. You want him to call your number. You want to be out there. You want to defend that last 30 seconds. You want to win that draw. You want the D man to rim the puck around the boards, and you know you're going to get killed by that D who's pinching in. But you know what? There's nothing more rewarding than getting that puck over the other team's blue line and the clock's killed and you win the game. You know, those are important situations in hockey games that if you want more ice time, those are the things that you have to do. And for me, I figured that out early on in my career that the only way I was going to get more ice time was to be a complete player. And those were the type of situations that I had to play in.
That's I think you make a great point, Theo. Let me ask you one more question about the as far as the Rangers go, and then we got a couple other questions for you before we finish up tonight. You mentioned Sean Avery in your book, and obviously he's a popular guy with most Ranger fans, and right now he seems to be totally out of his game, and it looks like he's either being handcuffed by the coaching staff or just by the NHL rules in general. But give us your take on Sean Avery.
Well, you know, I go back to the winning stuff, man. If you're going to play that way, you got to back it up. And back it up means winning. And, you know, obviously the Rangers have had a lot of success since he's been there, so I think he has backed it up. And you know, the Rangers are a different team when he's not in the lineup. You know, we need more of that. But, you know, he is handcuffed by the rules. He is handcuffed by, you know, kind of the comments he made last year and whatnot. You know, I don't have a problem with Sean Avery. You know, I think he's colorful. And, you know, hey, we all make mistakes. We all say things that sometimes we regret. But, you know, I think that, you know, and he's probably just going through a slump right now. You know, he's trying to figure out a way to, you know, to be an effective player with the new rules and with all the, you know, there's like 5,000 eyeballs on you every night. And it's tough to, you know, to do, you know, to be a pest nowadays. You know, it's difficult.
Yeah, I agree. Go ahead.
I just wanted to ask Theo, do you think like a guy like Sean Avery, and listen, you were feisty, but you were a skilled player, and, you know, Sean Avery is known for the yapping and the chirping, and listen, we love it as Ranger fans. It adds a whole new dimension to the game, makes it a lot of fun to watch. Do you think that a guy like him would really survive back in the day, so to speak? You know, now with the instigator penalty, a lot of people do not want to jump guys because they get into shenanigans. They're afraid of the fines. They're afraid of the suspensions, the whole bit. Do you see guys like Tutu and Avery and guys like this, would they have survived back in the old days?
No, not for 5 minutes. They wouldn't survive. You know, because, you know, they've taken the accountability out of the game. You know, they've really taken the accountability out of the game. You know, those guys can run around and you know, throw elbows, concuss guys, you know, and nobody's scared to be suspended. But, you know, take away the instigating rule and see how effective those guys are, you know.
Well, Theo, that brings me to a question. You were obviously a guy who throughout your career would have, if you felt a teammate, you know, had been pushed around on the ice or had, you know, somebody threw a dirty hit on him, you would have jumped in and helped that teammate at all costs. And that's a big problem right now for the Rangers. We don't see a lot of that. I don't know if you saw the hit on Chris Drury the other night against
Yeah, I sure did.
He's probably watching
Calgary.
The game.
Yeah, I completely spaced out as to who it was against, but but of all people to forget that against, right? But so if you saw that hit and the Rangers all just kind of stood around and you would have been sitting on the guy's head beating him to a pulp, although maybe not if he was a flame. But do you think is that something that's missing from the game nowadays, or is that a Ranger issue, or? I mean, the Rangers could use a guy like you right now. I mean, their goaltender's getting run every night. You never would have stood for that.
No, I would have ran their goalie. You know, like the game has changed so much since I left. You know, and even in training camp, I noticed, you know, what a difference, you know, the game has become and it's sometimes frustrating to watch what's going on in the ice. And like I said, You know, I think they've taken the accountability right out of it. You know, for a guy like Buck Richards to lay that Booth kid out the way he did, and nobody jumped in, like, seriously, you know, like that. In the old days, bench-clearing brawl, didn't matter what the consequences were. He was going to pay the price that night, and he was going to pay the price for the rest of his career. That doesn't happen anymore.
Nope, but the checks and balances are not there anymore. You don't have – that guy would have been spitting chiclets, crying for his mommy. I mean, everybody would have been over the boards and just gang-tackling him and just – and I don't know if it, maybe you can you saw a lot of the young guys in training camp this year. Do they have that in them, or is it just kind of like they don't have the kind of temper or the disposition to get really angry when they see that goalie roll? You know, Chris Kasopoulos has been on this show. He says this is the guardian of your goal, and if you can't stick up for him, you might as well not even be in the game. And do you think it's a younger mentality of the player today, or is it? It's just changed.
Well, like I said, there's really no incentive for the guys to get better. You know what I mean? It's hard to see that kind of stuff happening and your teammates not coming in to help you out, you know, and make the guy who hit you accountable. You know, I just know the way it would have been in the old days, you know. You would have been black and blue. Guys would have been hacking you all night long. And, you know, it's like, I don't know. It's a different mentality. It's a different game, different era. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's why people say, you know, they say to me, oh, he would have been unbelievable in the new game. And I'm like, you know what? I absolutely love the era that I played in. You know, it's when men were men and guys were accountable. And you knew that when you were flying up to Edmonton to play in the Battle of Alberta in Edmonton's building, that, you know what, you better pack a lunch pail and stick it on the bench beside you, because that's the kind of game it was going to be in. And it wasn't for the weak at heart, that's for sure.
Theo, we only got about 2 minutes left to go, and I just want to ask you a quick question about the comeback that you made in training camp. In the book, you talked about how you felt like you kind of owed the Rangers a little bit because of the problems you had with the team, and to the point where after your contract expired with them, you offered to come back and play at a discount to sign back with the Rangers. This time around, when you wanted to make your comeback, did you reach out to the Rangers at all about that, or was it strictly, were you strictly trying to come back with the Flames, and that was it? If it didn't work out, you were going to retire.
Yeah, well, the Flames were the only team that called, so you know, my chances were limited at that time. But in hindsight, yeah, maybe I should have called the Rangers. But
call them now. call them.
Call them now. We need you.
Yeah. Well, I haven't done anything in the gym since I left training camp. I've been busy across Canada doing this book tour, but for me, you know, the comeback was all about me challenging myself for, I guess, one last time, and just kind of prove it to myself that I hadn't lost, you know, the Theo Fleury fire in my belly, and that, you know, when I started last February, I was 215 pounds, and, you know, I ended up going to camp. I was 180 pounds, 8% body fat, and, you know, finished 11th in the fitness testing out of the 56 guys that were at camp. So,
wow.
You know, I was just like, I was, you know, it was great for me to challenge myself one last time and know that I still had that in me. Because I felt that I'd lost that part of my life somewhere, but you know, now I have it back, and like I said, I'm really looking forward to the future.
Yeah,
and I'm really looking forward to coming to New York.
Well, good.
All right.
And there's a real quick before we have to go. There's a homemade video on the internet on YouTube that somebody took of the shootout goal you scored in the preseason against the Islanders, And the ovation that you got from the Flames fans was just incredible. And your exuberance on the ice, you know, it was the Theo Fleury that we all remembered, and that was great to see. And I'm glad that you know, the comeback, at least you got out of it what you wanted to get out of it. But we got to wrap it up, Theo. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, and thanks to everybody for listening. And we'll catch you guys on Monday night at 8 o'clock.
Thanks, guys.
Take care, Theo.
All right, we're off the air. Theo, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Terrific book, and I wish you all the best.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot. Anytime, call me anytime if you want some humor on your show. So.
Oh yeah, man.
Okay.
I'm telling you, we love it. What were you shopping? Oh, yeah, what were you doing? You out shopping?
Well, I'm going to New York. You know, I got to hang out with Abe. You know, the fashion guy. So.
Oh geez.
I don't want to get crucified by the fashion police. So,
so you had to go get a metrosexual outfit to wear.
I did. Yep. Absolutely.
Well, I'll tell you, but no need to apologize. I know you feel you need to for the Ranger fans, but they love you. I mean,
I'm looking forward to the book signing down at Borders there at Penn Station. It should be a fun night.
Yeah,
do you know what day you're gonna be there?
Next Tuesday night before the Ranger game, I'll be there.
Oh geez, there's gonna be a mob scene.
Yeah, we'll promote
I'll
that
definitely,
on our site.
And I'll definitely be down there. You'll get to meet me.
Okay, cool. Awesome.
And
Theo, all right, Theo, thanks so much.
Yeah, and I'll put up a link on our site for your website as well in case people want to check it out. And again, thank you so much, and maybe we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, sounds good, guys. Take care. Have a good night.
All right, you too. Thanks.
Take care. You too.
All right, bye-bye. All right, guys, bye-bye.
Are you there still?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm gonna hang up so that we get off the podcast. I'll call you right back.
Okay.
Okay.